The first Tuesday music series at Mount Sequoia continues tomorrow night, and on stage will be Peter Lippincott with some of his friends. Many will know the name Peter Lippincott through pottery, through art, but it turns out that Peter has been playing musical instruments for some time. Isn't that true, Peter Lippincott?
That's very true, Kyle. I took piano lessons when I was quite small and played the clarinet in band, and alongside that, took up the guitar during the folk scare of the 1960s, so that'll give you some idea how long I've been at it.
Well, also on this CD, you play mandolin.
Yes.
Organ.
Yeah.
And let's see, I'm thinking
bass. Yeah. Harmonica.
So does picking up an instrument and figuring it out come relatively easy for you?
Well, I guess so, yeah. Most of the instruments that I work with are stringed instruments. You'll notice, but I did have those piano lessons, and I don't claim to be a great keyboardist, but one of the beauties of the new digital possibilities is that you can just put in a stream of notes from something. You don't have to do all the fingers in both hands, and so you can, when I did the organ, it was just to kind of augment what else I was doing.
You mentioned that you picked up the guitar during the folk scare, as you put it, of the 60s.
Yeah.
Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Absolutely.
Tom Paxton, that sort of.
Oh, yeah. Kingston Trio.
Kingston Trio.
Yeah, yeah. Tom Dooley was probably what tripped my trigger the first time.
How old were you when this was happening?
Oh, 12, when that was starting, probably. And I got the guitar when I was 14. And
got it because it was a present, or?
No, because I wanted to learn how to play it and talk my folks into. I started off with a nylon string guitar, and by, I think, 63, I had been doing a paper route for a long time and went and bought myself a Martin, which cost $300 at the time.
Oh, my. That's pretty expensive.
Well,
I mean,
it doesn't seem so now.
Yeah, but three. Paper route, $300, 1963.
Yeah.
And that was not an inexpensive instrument.
Oh, no, not at all. I know. It was top of the line stuff.
When did you start writing songs?
Well, very early, probably when I was 12. I wrote a song called The Jumpin' Bug. And it just went on from there. I wrote quite a bit in high school because that was the Vietnam era, and I was heading toward 18, and I was a conscientious objector, and so I was writing songs and lining my file down at the draft board with material, as well as supporting letters from people in the community and anything I could find to put in there. So,
what an inspiration to write.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was kind of inspiration desperation.
Yeah. I'm assuming, it's always dangerous to assume, but I'm assuming that the CD, Making Lemonade, is your first, at least in a while.
It is the first, yeah. I appeared on some albums, the old vinyls, in college. That was a coffee house at the University of Illinois and called the Red Herring, and they put out a series of albums that were compilations of the people that sang at the coffee house back in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s.
But so this is, you know, a dozen songs here. All, you know, this is you.
Yeah, that's me.
What was the origination of this? When did you first get the idea that this would become a physical object?
Well, let me back up a minute, because actually I put out a CD of fiddle tunes played on the mandolin, all of which I wrote about a year and a half before this one.
Really?
So that all started because I had a mandolin with me when we were traveling in Spain, and I just started making up tunes and writing them down, and eventually I had a dozen of those. And one that I put on that mandolin record was much older. I wrote a fiddle tune like 35 years ago, which has now entered the oral tradition. And if you pull it up on YouTube, there are people in Norway playing it and Michigan. And
you would just search
Snake River Reel's the name of the tune, yeah.
I want to ask you about some of the songs on this. Unfair Craft Fair. This is the one that ends it.
Right.
You sing about experiences that many of us have had at craft fairs.
Well, I think so, yeah. They're called a craft fair, but actually the word fair at the end of it is to denote food, F-A-R-E. And that seems to be the thing that people like the most at a craft fair is the food. So it's that kind of a play on words and observation of the human element at a craft fair.
We went to the craft fair, we came on home. We didn't buy nothing but an ice cream cone, two Frito pies and a funnel cake, some kettle corn and a plastic snake. There was so much stuff, I mean it took a while to see everything down every aisle. Them artist folks was smiling and waving, but I'm just thinking of the money I'm saving.
Does it always really rain in Knoxville when you're there?
It did.
Really?
It did. I was going to a wholesale show in Baltimore, and we drove through Knoxville coming and going. It rained, and that was just enough to be the spark for a song, you know? Just a little idea, a line to get started.
Why does it always rain in Knoxville? They fit together hand in glove. Why does it always rain in Knoxville? On the tragic side of love. Today I got no destination like I had when you was here.
Does driving or traveling help you write? Or?
Oh, quite often, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of the writing that I did when I lived in St. Louis, I had an hour commute from Godfrey, Illinois, into St. Louis. Godfrey's up near Alton, north of the city. And I wrote a lot of songs just driving back and forth. You've got that time. And I just would have a pad of paper next to me and write without looking at it particularly. And
I was going to ask, because when you're driving,
yeah,
and maybe if you come up with
dangerous.
A great line,
right?
Could you always read what you had written without looking?
Well, because it was current, you know, if I would, by the time I got to my job, if I would sit down and kind of make it legible, that was helpful.
There's a song on here about a legendary Fort Smith figure, Bass Reeves.
Bass Reeves, yeah. Yeah, and Fort Smith has really gone out. All out in celebrating Bass Reeves because Arkansas's first equestrian sculpture in bronze has been erected in Fort Smith at the Pendergraft Park down near the riverfront of Bass Reeves and his dog. So it's quite a deal for Fort Smith.
There was a U.S. Marshal, and he was true and good. Dead or alive, he got his man, it was well understood. He kept the law for Parker in Indian Territory. He was handy with his six gun, and his name, it was Bass Reeves. His life reads out like a legendary tale. You never would believe it. It's of such an epic scale. Born before the Civil War.
You know, I kind of spent the day the other day with Bass Reeves at the landfill. Yeah.
The guy that plays
right.
Bass
Reeves. Right, yeah, he's actually the director of the Department of Sanitation.
Exactly,
there.
Yeah, wild.
How many of these songs have you performed live?
Well, all of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
With the, because you're going to have Emily Cates,
right,
on stage with you at Mount Sequoia, and Dennis Collins
and Bruce Hawley. Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that's a pretty good combo you've got there.
It is. I mean, we just had our last pre-practice last night, and things are flowing really, really well. It's just such a pleasure to work with them because they're all such great musicians.
Have you played Clapp Auditorium before?
I haven't. No, I've been attending Music on the Mountain for the last couple years and started bugging Efren and Steve, who were doing the booking and making the arrangements at the time. I was bugging him and said, you know, I'd like to do this. And so
you know what everyone,
got the chance.
What everyone from Efren to Chase Missy, what everyone says about that room is it's really comfortable and it's a really, it's an overused word, but an intimate sort of setting.
It is.
It feels like you're among friends and family, even if it's some faces you don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. The people that come to that show really come to honor the musicians and to hear the music. You know, nobody's drinking beer and nobody's chatting with their friend except maybe the occasional aside, you know. So it's the scariest kind of audience because they're really paying attention. But it's also the warmest and the most rewarding.
Yeah, I can understand why it would be somewhat scary. But on the other hand, I mean, you're not having to sing these songs that you've written that are part of you be completely ignored by diners or
right.
people clinking glasses or whatever.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely the best venue that that I will have played at.
There are 12 on the CD. Do you have a playlist yet? Did you put together a formal playlist for the show?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And a lot of the ones that are on the CD will be on the playlist, but I'm going to do some traditional material and some things that are newer than what made it on the CD. So,
and you'll have the CD there, right? People
absolutely.
Will be able to.
Yeah, it'll be available.
Let me ask also about Give Me Your Money. That starts the CD.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
What was the inspiration for that song?
I'm not sure I can say exactly. There's just so much in the air right now about the hard times that the country's going through and the difficulty that people are having. And it seemed to me an obvious way for someone to get ahead in this in these tough times is to just go out and take it into their own hands to have people give them money.
Give me your money and your diamond ring. Gotta give my honey pretty shiny thing. This ain't no robbery, it's a donation. No want no snobbery or a commotion. If you got any gold.
I've talked to you several times before, never really about your music, but you do so many things. You're left-brained, you're right-brained. Is writing and playing music like anything else you do? I mean, is it like the other artistic endeavors you have? Or is it a sort of wholly different discipline?
Well, I don't think I have an answer to that.
That's fair enough.
I have always loved to play with language. I remember very clearly one time when I was visiting a friend of my parents, and they had a dark room that they let me use, and I went up to talk to the wife of the family on my way out, and we would sit around and chat, and she used big words. And I went home and said to my parents, oh, I wish you would use big words like Pat does. That didn't go over too well. But, and it's not that I like to use big words, but I just love language, and I speak pretty much Spanish and do pretty well in French. And so evidently playing with words and language is something that does come easy to me.
You should do a song that's just all polysyllabic words, just the biggest words you could get, you know, in a chorus.
Be careful what you ask for, okay. Kyle.
It's at Mount Sequoia. It's in Clap Auditorium. Starts at?
Seven.
And one of the great things about these shows is they start at 7.
Yes.
You know, if you've gone to shows before that start at 7 and or 8 or 9 and you're still waiting at 10:30.
Right.
This is...
Right. And there's no opening act.
Right. Right.
So wade through.
You do know what you'll open with.
Yeah, give me your money.
Okay, very good. They will already have. And Clap Auditorium Restoration
right, right,
Fund.
Yeah, right, yeah, to support the Clap Auditorium. Indeed.
If someone can't make it Tuesday night, they have another engagement or whatever, where could they find the CD or how could they?
Well, getting in touch with me is the way to do it right now. So,
By email or?
Yeah, email,
Okay.
Peter at mudpuppy-studios.com, or you can call me, 651-6104.
Simple enough.
Simple enough.
Thank you, Peter.
Okay, Kyle. Pleasure.
Peter Lippincott's CD is titled Making Lemonade. He'll perform tomorrow night at 7 in Clapp Auditorium on Mount Sequoia as part of their Music on the Mountain series. It's a fundraiser for the Clapp Auditorium Restoration Fund. This is Ozarks at Large.